welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, New Zealand's only full-time reality show. And by reality, I mean we're not in frickin' plain denial of everything that's going on and become utterly obsessed with news stories about a shark attack that hasn't happened since 1976, enough to make it front page news 3 days or 4 days in a row while assets are being sold off. Yeah, I mean, is anybody frickin' home? The news does not report anything that matters. Only the show does. I swear, this country is terrible. Terrible place to get news, unless you're getting it off independent websites from very special people, like my very special guest, Debbie Swanwick from organicnz.org.nz. Debbie, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinnie. How are you?
I'm not terribly happy today. Just filled out my census form, and it became abundantly obvious that I'm a slave, kind of thing. You know, it's one of those days.
Yeah. Yeah, understand that totally. Deal with it all the time.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us just a little bit about who you are and what your organisation does?
Okay. Well, Soil and Health Organic NZ is one of the oldest organic organisations in the world. So we were established in 1941. So we've been around for a long period of time. And what we do is we advocate for 100% pure organic food. So that's actually food that's free of GE, pesticides and additives. And, of course, what we're getting in this country is typically food, unless it's certified organic, so it's certified as BioGrow, Demeter, Organic Farm or Assure Quality, food that is contaminated with GE, pesticides and additives. Which is a real shame because New Zealand has a reputation as being 100% clean, green, and that's not the reality unless you're buying organic. So that's
true.
Who we are.
Okay. And how long's it been running for there?
Over 50 years.
I believe I met an elderly woman named Margaret who was like one
Margaret
of the first. Yeah, Margaret yep. Jones. I gave her a lift home.
I actually spoke to her the other day. In fact, I'm sure I mentioned to her at the time if she'd mind me repeating what she said. Margaret has two mandates that she said, she's now 92, that she wants to see happen in New Zealand before she dies, and that is New Zealand becoming 100% organic and vivisection in this country stopping. Last year, there were 35,000 animals that were persecuted by vivisection, and she made a statement of claim at the meeting that I was at that she's determined that she's not going anywhere until both of those things happen. So we definitely appreciate her commitment to the cause.
Yeah, and you also got to really love people like that who have, you know, been around for a long time, the old salts, that kind of thing. You know, they provide, especially if they're still fighters at that age.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, what a testament to organic. She's 92, she's digging out there in the garden, and she's living her dream and promoting her passion. So, and that's what it's all about. You know, all we really have to say to big agritechs like Monsanto is there's the living proof that it's all about food.
Well, I think Monsanto could just hold up one of their rats with a tumour that's about half the size of the rat and say, here's the living proof.
Yeah. But unfortunately, they don't. Unfortunately, they spend quite a bit of money each year on their PR spin. And when the Seralini study actually came out last year out of Ken University that talked about the GE-fed rats, who developed an 80% incidence of cancer in them versus 10 or 15%, which is normal for that particular species, there was certainly a strong reaction from Monsanto on for obvious reasons. You know, Monsanto at the moment is trying to fight GE being labelled in their food because as it stands at the moment, it isn't. And they certainly don't want to see the consumer become more educated as to why we want to keep GE out of our food although the consumer opinion suggests that they pretty much really are. There's like over 90% of American consumers actually want their food labelled. And the Proposition 37, which
Sorry to interrupt you, but I just saw a picture online not 20 minutes before this broadcast of one of those ladies who is delivering a petition and a DVD with 200,000 signatures to the White House about labeling, and this is what the Obamas promised, labeling their food, being arrested.
Yeah, pretty scary stuff, eh? That seems really tragic. That you get arrested for labelling your food. But obviously, you know, that's one of the
arrested for petitioning to label your food.
But, you know, that whole thing, they're trying to shut it down because the biggest market for them is America. So if they can actually shut down, if they can keep the American market going rather, then, you know, that's a huge profit to them. If that market gets shut down, which... it's looking like there's a potential that it's certainly going that way. That Proposition 37 only fell by 3%. If the American market shuts down, then big agritech is going to come screaming after every other country to try and get markets back, which I think is why you've seen a big resurgence in opinion and through the media, especially in the last year, about GE in New Zealand. And... I mean, we know that in Auckland alone, 80% of Aucklanders say they don't want GE. So they're not responding to a consumer demand. They're responding, our policies and politics is responding to a corporate demand. And that process is just undemocratic in itself when they should be representing people.
Debbie, we're having a little bit of problem with your audio. Would you mind clicking your webcam off there? And hopefully that will improve it a little. Sorry about that. This also reminds me of a segment on Radio Live that I was listening to. What was it? Some kind of a study was released saying that organic foods have no more nutritional value than non-organic foods. And this was a study done at a university, which was funded by massive big agrochemical business, genetically modified kind of companies and what have you, funded by them. And incidentally, didn't look into any of the side effects of the pesticides, herbicides, or genetically modified stuff versus organic, only whether or not there was the nutritional content.
Yeah, basically. And I mean, this is what we're seeing consistently. That study that you're talking about was done by Harvard, and Harvard in past years have taken over $500 million from big agritech. So that's what we're actually seeing a lot of is big agritech funding universities. And, of course, that has an impact on what universities are reporting. Them talking about the nutritional value of organic food, there's certainly a lot of research that actually suggests otherwise. And you have to think at the end of the day when big tech is funding so much money into universities, it is impacting on what scientists report, which is a tragedy in itself because we're not getting the facts.
Well, how are people exactly, and this is my problem with government just in general, how are people supposed to get the facts if the corporations don't want to give the facts and the corporations own the government?
Jump on our Facebook page and do your own research as well. You know, that's one of the big issues of our time is that there's some self-responsibility here. It goes without saying that, you know, if you want to believe someone that's actually suggesting that you have a glass of Roundup with breakfast and it's good for you and there's a convincing argument in that and you don't delve any deeper, then... You know, so be it. But at the end of the day, if you want to take responsibility for your own health, then you need to do the research or you need to at least link with some organisations that have done their research and have got the real facts and are impartial in reporting them, because you're certainly not going to be given those facts by someone who's got an ulterior motive, and that ulterior motive is normally the almighty dollar It's not about your health.
What is the point then in having media or government agencies then if you know, like, it's their responsibility to inform people properly, right? Unbiased reporting, perhaps, maybe accurate fact-based legislation, things of that nature, recommendations based on facts and figures. Should we disband the media? Like, I was toying with the idea of maybe banning media in New Zealand. I mean, they're not doing the job anyway. And while we're at it, ban the government too. I was just wondering about the census form. Like, I got the census form here today, and I was just thinking to myself, you know what? They tell us in these ads that it's going to help spend money more accurately. Well, what the hell did they do with the last census since then? You know, we'll look at a little of the massive debt that we're in, the forced amalgamations of Auckland, the sell-off of state assets and all of this other jazz. I don't think the census helped much.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. You know, the thing is, I mean, coming from that background myself as being a Juno, I totally relate, but I think there's definitely bias in the media. But there are some great Junos out there doing some really good work. One that springs to mind at the moment is Sandra Finney from Straight Furrow, is doing some fantastic investigative journalism. So, you know, whilst a lot of the reporting that's actually coming through isn't too accurate and is certainly biased, there are some people that are making a difference. But, yeah, totally agree with you. I mean, mainstream media just doesn't tell the truth. But then that's why, you know, people like you are in existence, Vinny, so, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
To get the news out there. Yeah.
They might make it illegal.
Yeah, that's right.
Some new hate speech law or something like that. You know how Australians say, instead of saying the word the letter H, they say H? Well, I was thinking of, like, passing a draconian law to get rid of that, an anti-H speech law.
Yeah. Good idea. Mm.
You know, while we're at it. The other element here is, I think this kind of applies directly to the media, is that the people who are reporting things to other people aren't actually smarter. And that's the problem with society. We appeal to authority so much because we assume that because somebody's in a position of trust in a fiduciary level, whether that be a judge or a lawyer or a doctor or a journalist or a government agent or something like that, we assume that they're trustworthy. We assume that they're intelligent. And Ian Wishart, one of the biggest journalists in this country's history, really, you know, second maybe only to Paul Holmes, said that when he was in the media, his conclusion was most of them are just airheads. You know, they don't have any idea what the heck is going on, and they're mostly preoccupied thinking about their Gucci handbags or their next trip to Tahiti.
It might be the case. It definitely might be the case, but hopefully, I mean, you know, I'm certainly seeing, I spend a lot of time talking to Junos and briefing them about what's really going on in the world, and, you know, they're busy people. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well, just not being able to take the time to actually do any investigative journalism. But luckily, some people in this country are, so, and that's what we actually need. If we can get some really good stories out there about what's really going on and what's the truth. And, you know, I think that's where social media comes in too, and that's certainly something that Organic NZ is actually looking at doing, you know, is hitting up 800 million people at one time through YouTube. So, and that's the power of social media. So people are taking back power in that way and also telling their own stories about what they've actually learnt and becoming their own Junos. So, you know, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, I do find that's really important for a free and open society, is for people to basically, I see the job of the media is just two things, really. Keep an eye on the powerful and tell the people about it. And that's really it, because you don't really need to keep an eye on the powerless people who can't affect nothing, you know. And that seems to be what happens, you know. A single person hurts one other person or whatever. What about a single person who devalues a currency by 50% and forces the country into an arbitrary recession?
Yeah.
I mean, let's weigh it up here, yo.
Yeah, I know. So the fairness of the system, is often compromised, isn't it? Or the lack thereof. So, yeah.
We're speaking very generally here, and we're going to be coming up on a break soon. And when we come back, I want to actually really talk about organics in and of itself, and primarily it seems that, well, in my opinion, almost anything that's good that exists in society winds up being under threat at some point, and anything that's evil winds up growing so that it consumes everything in its path. You know, that's just my general rule of thumb for society. So we want to see what's consuming the organic market, as it were. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen, with Debbie Swanwick. The website is organicnz.org.nz or organicnz.org.nz for the American listeners. Back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest is Debbie Swanwick from the organicnz.org.nz. Welcome back to the program. And if you were to elucidate with detail, as I'm sure you probably know, what are the threats to organic farming at the moment just affecting New Zealand or the world, if you could give it context?
Well, most probably the biggest threat, ironically, is the media, because big agritech companies such as Monsanto and Dow Chemicals, etc., have constantly got journos actually working on stories, or they're planting stories out in the media to discredit organics and to promote genetic engineering especially. So it's really big corporates actually running their own agenda through our food system, and that's disintegrating our food sovereignty when they basically start taking control, and there's a revolving door between them and politics, as we see in America with the FDA and Monsanto especially.
Well, that seems to be very much the case. And is this the case in New Zealand, though? Because I haven't seen any large-scale agribusiness employees become politicians. It doesn't mean that it hasn't happened, though. I'm just not aware of who they might be.
Yeah, no. I think one of the ways it's actually happening in New Zealand is it's being done through our legislation. So some of the things that are on the agenda for New Zealand at the moment is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and the food bill, and both of them actually speak within those documents about aligning our food supply with conventions or protocols or policies of our international trading partners. And America being one would suggest that our food supply is under threat, or the sovereignty thereof is under threat, because of some of the policies that are going on in America. So if GE is commonplace there and the accepted norm, then it would suggest that that's actually what is going to happen with our food supply should these legislative regulations actually come into effect. So that's why there's such strong opposition to things like the TPPA and the food bill at the moment. And apart from that, and as an aside, the food bill especially is something that is most probably forecast to increase compliance costs of small food producers, which is, you know, small organic producers or people making food in their home and selling them at markets, etc., like that. So, and that's removing consumer choice, which from our perspective, whether or not you agree with genetic engineering or additives being put on your food or fluoride in your water, it really should actually be about consumer choice. We shouldn't have to be forced to eat GE food or have to consume fluoride because that's our only water source. Mm. And, you know, and that actually boils down to mass medication, which, you know, the Joe public should actually be really concerned about.
Speaking of mass medication, apparently last year about 6,000 people died from the use of registered medicines that were properly prescribed and medical mishaps. Foodborne illnesses killed 6 people. What have we got legislation in order to stop?
Foodborne illnesses?
Oh, my God, it's so dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been that way. You know, our government actually jumps over food safety as an issue. But what we see is, it's like, where is the issue? We don't actually see that issue happening. And one that's come up especially of late is the raw milk issue, which I've been speaking about a bit, because raw milk in this country at the moment can only be sold at the farm gate. Well, raw milk is a natural probiotic, and the government are well aware that farmers' children have increased immunity. And, of course, the one thing that they've got in common is they all drink raw milk. So that's why they've spent $50 million of the taxpayer money producing a genetically engineered cow called Daisy, who doesn't even have a tail, so that they can actually produce allergy-free milk, because that's one of the other advantages of raw milk, is that it's unpasteurised, and that means that kids typically don't have that allergic response, because the pasteurisation process produces histamines in milk, and that's typically why children actually react to it. And, you know, we're saying our dairy practices now are up to speed. We don't need to pasteurise milk, but the fact of the matter is that there is no industry behind raw milk, and that would compromise Fonterra and their market. But, you know, that might be what's best for Fonterra, but that's not necessarily what's best for the consumer. But MPI constantly talk about the safety of raw milk, and it's just ridiculous. You know, it actually begs the question why breast milk isn't pasteurised, to be honest.
Yeah, it is very interesting, isn't it?
Straight out of a cow, you know, you can't get much better than that.
I've always thought of New Zealand as sort of a Fonterra state.
Yeah. Well, you know, Fonterra are going through their own trials and tribulations at the moment, and ironically it's something that we've actually been talking about for quite a period of time, is that the consumer wants a natural, pure product. So, you know, recently Fonterra made an announcement in the media that they'd actually found DCDs in their milk, and as a result the
What are DCDs? Can you play movies on them?
Oh, no. DCDs are actually, they're a, how do you explain DCDs? The fertilisation process that goes on with our dairy cows. We raised the issue about 6 years ago, saying, you know, would these not be traceable in our milk supply? And we're told, without a shadow of a doubt, that they'd never be found in our milk supply. But, you know, they were. So, and Fonterra actually found them in the milk supply last September. They then actually floated their shares on the market without telling the public or New Zealand farmers, who are shareholders, that that had happened. And they've only made it public quite recently as to what actually happened. And when they did, the Chinese market just crashed, because they don't want contaminants in their milk. And no matter how much Fonterra is actually saying it doesn't matter, it's about what matters to the consumer, not what matters to Fonterra, but what matters to the consumer and their perception of it. That's a $10 billion industry that they're holding to ransom by introducing contaminants in the milk supply. And that has an effect on everyone else as well, because that's impacting New Zealand's reputation, and we have a fantastic reputation in organics anyway, for being 100% pure. So we don't want that tarnished by someone who's practicing such things.
Well, I don't know about you, but if anything's being marketed, pretty much guarantee is the exact opposite. So if you say New Zealand's 100% pure, you probably say it's 100% crap.
Yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Unless it's organic.
Yeah.
Well, then you can pretty much rubber stamp it and say, yeah, that's safe. But, you know, our perception of it is it should be the other way around. We've got a pure product. Why are we having to jump through hoops and get certification on it? Why isn't it the other way around? Why don't we start with a pure product? And if you then want to pasteurise it or put additives into it, you get certification.
Here's a good reason. It prevents people being able to compete with major, mega agribusiness.
Yeah. Good point. So, and that's it. You know, we shouldn't be putting compliance costs up on people that are doing the right thing or being prejudicial against them just because they're small-scale producers. Small-scale producers are doing some great work out there. But when you're talking about bringing in things like certification or, you know, the food bill to increase compliance costs, then you haven't got a level playing field. You've got an incredible amount of costs going against a small producer that can't afford it, and it will just be pushing some of them out of the market.
This is what happened. A consumer choice. This was something interesting. I believe I read a story about this happening in Washington, D.C. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was like interior designers lobbied the government to increase the compliance cost of new licenses for interior design. And as a direct result, it prevented other new interior designers from being able to afford to even enter into the market. And so now it's dominated by a few.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly the same. I mean, it's a good strategy. It's a good strategy for corporates. It's a crap strategy for consumers because it takes away their choice. So whether or not you agree with the argument, you should at least agree with the process, which is it should be on a level playing field, and it's not when they're introducing policies that stand against small-scale producers.
Here's the question.
Or trying to align us with international corporates, for that matter.
Here's the question. Why would one want to level the playing field when it's already tilted towards them?
That's it. So, but you know, this is where consumer has the ultimate power, because consumers actually get to choose. At the moment, we've got GE labelling in this country, so we get to choose whether we want to eat those products. We get to choose whether or not we believe that GE foods will actually cause cancer and fertility problems, as well as 20 other 9 diseases that have actually been proven. So, and if you
vote, it has nothing to do with belief, and if that's the regard, because it's fact they cause cancer.
Yeah. So, and why would you actually want to do that? You know, why would you want to choose that as an option? But it is about being educated and just being a bit prudent about who you're actually listening to. Because if you're listening to a big corporate, they've got an agenda that they're running. We've got an agenda that we're running as well, but our agenda is the consumer. We want the best food for the consumer, and we want their right to choose. So we're not advocating that they're not able to buy GE food. We're just saying if GE food is the only option, you will no longer have the right to buy organic food, because as soon as we get GE crops in this country, for example, they'll contaminate organic and conventional crops, so you'll no longer have any choice. And Australia is actually going through this at the moment. There's a big case in front of the Western Australian Supreme Court where an organic farmer, because there is GE contamination now in Australia, has just sued a conventional farmer because he's contaminated his crops and he's lost his organic certification. You know, so as it stands, I think New Zealand, because we've actually kept away from the GE issue for the most part, and we've been quite staunch about that, we've actually been blessed in that we've been able to gain from the experience of other countries throughout the world and how they've actually been impacted by GE or contamination in their food supply. But the race is on now. I mean, Bhutan actually has been talking for quite a few years that They think that they're going to be the first country in the world to be 100% organic. And Bhutan is actually strategically placed, you know, between India and China. So they've got major trading partners that they can cater to and consumers that are actually wanting that. What we see as a real tragedy is that should be New Zealand's claim to fame. You know, New Zealand's always done everything first. We gave women the vote. Some people might not agree with that, but we did. gave women the vote. We declared ourselves nuclear free. And we should be the first country in the world to be 100% organic, because that is how other people see us. And it's a real shame that some people in this country don't see us that way, because we should really be stepping up to the plate and taking that competitive advantage in our major markets, because that's what they're telling us they want.
See, small economies are, have to be sort of like either cottage industry or high-tech economies in order to really flourish and survive, don't they? You know, yeah. if you've got a massive population base, your economy can be quite varied and doesn't necessarily have to specialize, because you've got a massive quantity of land, people, things like this, in order to contribute, trade, etc. If you've got a very small amount of people and a very small country, limited land area, limited population, things like that, you become relied on for specialities. Okay, take Taiwan for example. Not a very big country at all, but boy, oh boy, do their people get paid a hell of a lot of money, because they make really advanced technology there. Same with Japan, you know, and they invest in their own infrastructure and all of this kind of stuff, just like, you know, Slovenia, Croatia, Malaysia, things like that. Their economy is booming. We don't do that, on the other hand.
No, yeah, but we could. And this is a perfect opportunity for us to do exactly that. And because we are so far removed from the rest of the world, we can essentially say, okay, well, you know, GE contamination, one of the issues around that is that it's pollen, you know, so it doesn't accept any boundaries. But because we're remote, we can take advantage of the fact that it doesn't actually matter.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Absolutely. The problem is, you know, the incredibly expensive lawyers' fees that you'll have to kind of undergo if you want to argue with these big corporate scumbags and their whole teams of scumbags that they have. Maybe you can make a massive loan off of GE money. We'll be right back after the break with Debbie Swanwick.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know the way it's going to go. 'Cause we can't see the way it's going to be.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, New Zealand's number one conspiracy-oriented talk radio. And let me define conspiracy. Two or more people coming together to cause harm on another group of people without that group of people knowing about it. Anybody heard of a genetically modified organism? GMO. In New Zealand, we call it GE. GMO, I always mistook for the modus operandi of a gangster, which incidentally is not too different. My very special guest is Debbie Swanwick. Welcome back to the program. We've only got one segment left. I wonder what we will talk about now.
Well, how about we talk about the organics Aotearoa New Zealand, which is actually our export sector of organics that actually launched at Parliament today, relaunched at Parliament. So, and they've just recently come out with a report that they've been conducting over the past 5+ years, talking about in the past 5 years the 300 to 400% increase in community, school and marae gardens and home gardening. So people are obviously taking up the cause and grabbing a spade and getting back into their gardens, and that's really good to see, because that's empowering and people taking control of what they're actually eating. But we've had huge growth in the organics market in the past 3 years as well. We've had a 25% increase in our produce sector. We've had a 33% increase in our organic dairy. And we've had an amazing 70% increase in our beverages market. So, you know, which is really ironic considering we're going through a global financial crisis. Everyone else is going down and we're going the other way. So,
well, the Chinese character for crisis is the same as the Chinese character for opportunity.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely cashing in on it. So that's good to see.
Well, see, and here's the irony. In fact, look, the world's run by scumbags. Anybody who doesn't know that by now is fucking retarded. It's just that simple. So it's like basically if you have a look at any sector of society, you know, organics or whatever, you see things that just don't make sense unless you're a criminal sociopathic scumbag. Then it makes total sense.
That's the one, yeah. Yeah, and we're dealing with quite a few of those in our in the food game because, you know, if whoever controls the food controls the world at the end of the day, and this is a great, food's a great opportunity for big pharma and big agritech to come together as well, which is something that's being talked about, you know, mass medication through food, and we're already seeing it with fluoride in the water supply. Last year, we just about saw it with folic acid being introduced into bread, but the Food Safety Minister, Kate Wilkinson, actually put her foot down and said there's some disagreements over the science about whether we should put folic acid in bread, and she decided to vote for the consumer and keep it out. So it's really good to see that our government's actually listening to what the consumer wants, and that is that the consumer wants choice, and that's what we advocate for all the time. So whether or not you agree with GE or additives or pesticides and whether or not you want them in your food, at least give people who don't want them in the food that option. Yeah.
Well, we're never given that option with fluoride in the water. I've lamented just how difficult it is to avoid fluoride when it's in everything. I mean, even organic food is sometimes grown with fluoridated water being used to water it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I thought was really interesting the other week is I was actually looking at some demographics about who makes the most money in this country because, you know, one of the arguments against fluoride is that it dumbs down the population, and the population per capita that's making the most money in this country is rural New Zealand. And, of course, they don't have fluoride in their water. So... Which begs the question, you know, are they smarter and as a result making more money? So
Maybe it's all the fresh air.
Yeah, that's right. Fresh air.
And fresh food.
Raw water, fresh food, yeah, and raw milk. So so there you go. There's obviously, apart from the health benefits, there just might be some monetary benefits to it as well. So, but yeah, we certainly don't believe that people should have to eat what corporate America spits out because it's definitely making them sick. Over 60% of American food today is processed. So 3 out of 4 of those processed items actually contain GE, and America's got one of the sickest societies in the world. So, and there's definitely a push in the States anti-GMO diets as well, with doctors even recommending that. So, and, you know, we, unfortunately, organics in New Zealand is quite often the organisation at the bottom of a cliff when people actually start having health issues. They come to organics and start getting their diet sorted out. But everyone knows the answer to the world's biggest issue about what is making us sick, and the answer's food. So we need to sort our food out and get healthier food, and that's our biggest remit, is to advocate on behalf of the consumer to ensure that that happens by keeping everything out of our food supply that's actually not meant to be in it. So you might have some government department professing that it's all right to put the 18 additives, for example, that are in our food that are not overseas, but, you know, is Mother Nature in agreement? because we suggest that when you have a sick society, Mother Nature isn't. And Mother Nature's our CEO, and she knows better than any politician or any corporate advocating something that's ultimately pushing their own bottom line forward. It's not about people's health.
I think a 9-year-old kid with common sense knows more about health than the average politician.
Yeah. So hopefully those 9-year-old kids, and what we're actually saying is that children especially are really getting back into the garden, because people have lost that art. You know, they don't know what's grown anymore and what season or how to grow it. And one of our mandates is actually encouraging people to do that. And kids are definitely there. Kids know all about it and they know what's going on. So hopefully the next generation actually makes a strong stand against domination of our food supply, and we actually manage to turn this whole thing around, because it really should be the people's voice and what they want, not corporate America.
Yeah, and I think under the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which the Americans are key to sign, and by the Americans, I mean America with a K. The fascist USSA Soviet Socialist drone strike republic. Mm. And yeah. This is what they want to do to yeah. everything, you know. And the same people that are in control of America are the same people that are in control here, and the same people who are really in control everywhere. Except the EU, for some reason, they've outlawed GMO foods, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
They've also outlawed fluoride.
Yeah, totally. So don't know what is actually going on in Europe that they've done that, but good on them, because that's exactly the way it should be.
Maybe it's because it's where all the European royalty live.
Well, yeah, funny you should mention that, because, we always profess that organics are actually the food of kings. So, and even, you know, like the debate going on here at the moment over raw milk and whether or not we should actually get that into supermarkets, and so that, you know, people that live in cities have access to it. The Queen Mother was actually smuggling raw milk into Prince William and Harry when they were at Eton. So, you know, that speaks volumes about the safety of raw milk.
You've got to love that diplomatic immunity card.
Yeah. So she knows what's going on, and Prince Charles, being one of the greatest advocates for organics, actually says it all as well.
And so, ironically, he's also one of the biggest advocates for eugenics.
Yeah.
I advocate organics for myself, eugenics for everybody else.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, he hasn't ticked all the boxes, but whilst he's actually touting organics, you know, we'll definitely have to say that's good in part anyway.
Yeah, let's hope he doesn't return as a deadly virus to contribute something to overpopulation, as he said he wished to.
Yeah.
You know, so, it's a scary, scary world. You don't know anything about chemtrails or nothing like that? Because I don't know if you want to sully your hands with the conspiracy side of things.
No, I don't know too much about that, actually. I know a little bit about chemtrails, but not as much as I do about organics and our food supply.
Well, what's interesting is the chemtrails have been tied in, you know, allegedly spraying a lot of aluminium over the soils, which makes them too acidic for plants to grow. And Monsanto's come up with this new crop that is aluminium resistant.
Fantastic. Gosh, you just got to hand it to those guys, eh? Yeah, I mean, Monsanto's definitely increasing their enemy base, let's say. So one of the things that happened last year is their BT crop failed and put...
Well, hold on, Debbie, we can't hear quite what you're saying. AFAR, can you bring the feed down a little bit? Let Debbie finish her point. There we go. Go ahead.
Yeah, so one of the things that happened last year is the American BT corn crop failed and put over 70% of American corn at risk. And, you know, that's one of our biggest issues around GE, is that whether or not you agree with the science, it takes away any other possible opportunity for conventional organic crops to grow, because they actually contaminate. So should something actually go wrong, which is what is happening with super bugs and super weeds, etc., it leads us towards an agricultural dead end. And considering, you know, the percentage of our food that's pollinated.
Okay, welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good to the economy because everybody managed to snap up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is still... Debbie Swanwick from organicnz.org.nz. Now, we're going to do something that we very rarely do on this show. We're going to take some callers. So the call-in number, if you are living in New Zealand, is the number one.
The number one. 218-339-8525 to get into the show.
218-339-8525. Now, you know, interestingly enough, organics, GMOs, GE, whatever you want to call it, are actually really hearty issues. And incidentally, also make quite a hearty soup while you're at it. The main thing that I really want to be hearing from the callers on is what their opinions are on exactly how to stop this, you know, good advocacy organizations. You know how the word lobbyist, Debbie, has become a dirty word? I've realized that lobbyist, like freedom fighter, can mean two things. You're either a scumbag advocating for other scumbags or you're a good person advocating for ordinary people.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it certainly does. But that's what we consider that we're actually doing. We're constantly lobbying, whether it's a central or local government, to implement policies that protect the purity of our food so that it doesn't include GE pesticides or additives, because no one wants that stuff in their food. And the only reason that they're typically consuming it is because they don't know it's there. So,
see, I always wanted to have just a little bit of pesticide in a salt shaker or something like that, just to add to my food if I wanted.
That's right, glass of Roundup with breakfast and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little eyedropper, you know.
Yeah. So, but the market that's, or the demographic that's really driving the organics market is actually young families. So, you know, people tend to actually start looking at their food when they have kids, and they're actually looking at the safety and, you know, what they're putting, what they're giving to their kids to eat. So, and the fluoride issue that you've just raised is especially pertinent to breastfeeding mums, because obviously you're putting fluoridated water into your kids' bottles. Not breastfeeding mums, but, you know, new mums that are bottle feeding. So, and that's quite a high concentration for a young child.
It gives all new meaning to suck it till you're blue in the face.
Yeah, that's right, it does. So it's also a good strategy that the breastfeeding mums advocate on a frequent basis as to why you should actually do that versus bottle feeding your child.
Yeah.
So when you look at the dangers of fluoride and mass medication.
Well, there was a new film come out. Who was it? I think it was Paul Wittenberger and Chris Maple, called The Great Culling. First of three documentaries, the first about the water and about the fluoride in the water. And what I found very interesting is that they tested a whole bunch of these bottled waters, and they all tested positive for fluoride. They tested juices that tested positive for fluoride. They tested, soda and soft drinks and things, and they tested positive for fluoride. It's in everything now.
Yeah. It's not a good look, eh? So, but it's at the end of the day, it's mass medication, and just that alone is wrong. You know, whether or not you agree with fluoride or you think you need it for your teeth, I mean, the stats actually prove you don't, and that's also why it's written on toothpaste that you don't consume it. So, but you just shouldn't be mass medicating the general public. There's just something extremely undemocratic when you haven't got their authority to do so that you're actually doing that.
Yeah. And I had a advocate against fluoride on the show from Ireland, and he did the statistical breakdown for me. About 30% of water in Ireland gets lost due to, you know, cracks in pipes and things like that underneath the ground that people haven't found yet. And of that, so that you're losing 30% of your fluoride with the 30% of the water that you're using out there, right?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, there's a whole bunch of other statistics. I can't remember exactly what he said, but the point being, what the hell is the point in fluoridating the water? Because all the children that have tooth decay problems don't drink water. They drink fizzy drinks. They drink the sugary stuff that gives them the tooth decay in the first fracking place.
I would watch it if I was you. You might be putting some ideas into Coke's mind as to what they can do with that fluoride.
Another mate of mine told me that Coke syrup, you know, like the real thicky toffee kind of tar-like syrup, you know, that comes off the ships and stuff like that, is a level 6 hazardous material out of six possible levels, okay? Yeah. And then they ship it for your hazmat truck. Like, here's how you know it's a level 6 biotoxin. Have one breath, you're dead in 5 seconds, okay? Then they ship it via hazmat truck to a local bottling plant, water it down with contaminated fluoridated municipal water, sell it to you, and this is the wonder of marketing. Guess what they call it? The real thing.
Yeah, that's right. We've been having conversations recently with some of our food suppliers in New Zealand who are advocating that some products are actually natural and the real thing. In fact, one of late, because something that's happened just in the past year is our stock feed, which used to be GE-free, is now contaminated. So Cargill's, who's one of the main suppliers out of Australia for New Zealand stock feed, can't confirm nor deny. Does this ring any bells? Can neither confirm nor deny that our stock feed has been contaminated with GE. With genetic engineering. So as a result, you know, our stock feed now has GE, so it's actually coming through the food chain, and that's also going into our dairy industry, which is pretty scary. So we've actually been having conversations recently with some of our stock feed suppliers, and we think we've actually got one of our stock feed suppliers who's picked up the baton and said, yeah, I'll look at it. And one of the interesting things is they're actually looking at taking out the American soy and replacing it with Indian soy, and, you know, which we're just rapt about because Indian soy is GE-free. So, you know, that's going to be a huge market and a huge potential market that America's actually going to lose if they don't pick up the game. Because we've got people in New Zealand that are going, look, you know, we might not actually want organic stock feed, but we definitely want GE-free stock feed. And at the end of the day, anyone that's transitioning across to a pure food supply, we're more than happy to help them along. And so if we can get a stock feed supplier in New Zealand that supports a GE-free policy, then we're more than happy to pat them on the back and you know, hopefully too, I think they'll actually pick up a market because there's a market there that's actually demanding it. People that have got backyard chickens or they're growing their own pork or, you know, they want a product that's, because they're actually doing it to be sustainable, they want a product that's actually going to be as 100% pure as what they can get. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an interesting game anyway, because I think what you'll actually see is markets, people that are actually paying attention to markets and looking at the almighty dollar, ironically, are going, this is what the consumer wants, and if we just give it to them, we will not only be satisfying the consumer, but we'll actually be putting money in our back pocket. And, you know, we're really happy to support business in doing that if they're making good decisions that are about the consumer, but not when they're self-absorbed and just thinking about their own bottom line. at the expense of what's in the best interests of the consumer.
Mm. I heard of a business practice called a triple bottom line. So you've got to make money. I mean, nobody wants to be in business to not make money, you know, otherwise you're working for nothing. And that's called slavery.
Yeah.
Second bottom line is it's got to be sustainable, meaning you've got to source materials that regrow or something like that, so you don't do any permanent damage and you can put back what you take out.
Yeah.
And thirdly is guaranteeing that you don't do any damage to the people who consume your product. You know,
yeah.
I think those are very reasonable. The problem is people only want the one.
That's right. Yeah, but ironically, I mean, Big Agritech argues that we're not sustainable. That organics isn't sustainable. So
Only perpetually poisoning the ground and groundwater with massive fossil fuels is sustainable, right?
Yeah, that's right. So they're actually, you know, one of the big arguments that they espouse is that we've got a huge population increase forecast and we can't feed the world. And the fact of the matter is,
where did they get this statistic from? The birth and death rates in the Western world are like 1.6. You need at least 2.6 in order to prevent your own extinction.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. But, you know, the facts of the matter are that we have a world where we have incredible rates of obesity in the Western world and incredible rates of poverty. It's not an issue of feeding the world. It's an issue about getting distribution into countries that have got issues of poverty and, you know, where they're dealing with how do we feed the starving. We have the answer for that. The most drought-resistant crops that there are available are organic. But in addition to that, we currently waste 40% of our food. So, you know, we don't actually need to produce any more food. We just need to figure out how to get the food that we currently produce to the people that actually need it. And that's not the way economies are actually set up, because if you were to do that, rather than dumping huge amounts of food, it would bring your bottom line down. So that's what the issue is, really. So this talk about, you know, feeding the world and how we need genetic engineering to do that, no, we don't. We don't need that at all. In fact, that's just going to compromise it further, as we've seen with the BT corn crops last year.
Did you know that the rich list was just released? Okay.
Yeah.
And it determined that there were a hell of a lot more people now in the billionaires club than there once were. And I thought that was very interesting. More billionaires. And more people dying of starvation at the same time.
Yeah, the irony. Maybe those billionaires could actually try feeding some of the world starving. So,
well, see, if they wanted to, we've got the money. Okay, we've got the money, we've got the resources, we've got the talent, we've got the know-how, we've got the technology to feed every single person, clothe every single person, and house every single person. But it ain't being done.
No, it's not being done. But, you know, if governments won't do that, the people can do it themselves. So, you know, subsistence farmers actually growing their own produce is one way to do that. But what is actually happening in the world is people like Monsanto are jumping in, selling their GE seed to subsistence farmers. It's a Terminator seed. So they have to go back to Monsanto the following year, buy more seed that they can't afford, buy more chemicals to actually control the pests. You know, pesticide use has risen dramatically with GE crops. And I've been hearing talk recently from people saying, you know, when I go to the supermarket now, I'm actually making a conscious decision, whether it's about organics or not, but I'm making a conscious decision not to buy American produce, because I know that their pesticide levels are ridiculously high because of all the GE crops they're growing, and I don't want to be feeding that to my family. So, and, you know, as a first port of call, I think that's actually commendable. I think it's you know, a well-educated purchasing decision as well. So if you can buy locally grown produce that hasn't got that amount of spray on it, why wouldn't you do that?
What's interesting, though, is that we're paying a huge amount in New Zealand for our dairy and meat, and we're one of the that's like one of our primary products. I don't understand why it's so expensive for us to get what's right here and why it's so cheap for everybody else to get what's from way across the world.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
Do you have any idea why that is?
Well, you know, our meat industry is based predominantly on our export markets. But, you know, we've got so many people that are in the supplier chain now that are taking a cut on it because farmers aren't making huge amounts of money on meat. And actually, if you look at people that are doing home kills, I think are paying something like $6 a kilo for a beast. So, and you look at how much you're paying for steak or something, which is $30 a kilo, and someone's making a lot of money out of our meat industry. It's not the New Zealand farmer, though. So there's just so many people in that supply chain that add their costs on, and you throw supermarkets into that mix as well, and that becomes the price that you're actually paying. And we've certainly got quite restrictive legislation around home kills as well to make that an option for the general populace. But I think the market that's really being held to ransom at the moment in New Zealand is people that live in cities. You know, urban New Zealand doesn't have the same advantages that rural New Zealand does because they can actually do their own home kills. They have access to raw milk. They can grow their own produce because of land and you know, what's actually forecast. Some people are saying we're now 5 years into a food crisis, is that rural land prices are going to go up because the new currency is going to be food. And I very much doubt the new currency is going to be food that's contaminated. It will be food that is pure and you know where it's come from. And that's what, you know, the advantages of living in rural New Zealand is that you do know that. And the advantages of buying organic is that you know that as well. So you know that it's actually a pure product, which you can't say the same for conventional or, you know, GE food supplies.
Yeah. Well, it becomes about look, we can't rely on the educators and we can't rely on the legislators and we can't rely on the reporters. You got to rely on yourself and take personal responsibility for what goes in your mouth. Do you know where it came from? No, you don't. No, you don't. Nobody knows where the hell their food came from. They only know where it goes. Down the gullet and out the hatch. Randall Steiner, North Dakota, calling in. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
I've been to Reno, Chicago.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that goes everywhere where others fear to tread. It's the most fun 2 hours you can ever have in talk radio while learning about your own subsequent extermination and enslavement. My very special guest is Debbie Swanwick, and we have a caller in, Debbie. His name is Randall Steen, I think, from North Dakota. You're on the air.
Hi,
Randall.
Hello,
my friend. Hey, the reason I call in is I live in kind of the breadbasket of the U.S., and up here in the Red River Valley, it's more suited to sugar beets, and we grow a heck of a lot of them up here. There's piles of them, windrows of them everywhere.
Yeah.
But the reason I felt compelled to call in is supposedly these GE crops, they are a hybrid of sorts where they're not fertile. And supposedly this genetic material can't get out in the open. And what I've been seeing is these GE crops, the fields of them, during crop rotation, I'll see corn crops after having been, beet crops after having been sprayed, having corn come up that is BT resistant. So apparently they last into the next season, and they are there for good, meaning that they're viable, they're breeding.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's exactly the case. So, you know, we had a situation in New Zealand a couple of months ago where there was some uncrushed GE seed that actually came in into the South Island, luckily, from a shipment via Australia, which is, you know, pretty dangerous stuff, because if it had happened to come into another port, that could have quite easily grown. So, you know, there was certainly a lot of discussion around it at the time about uncrushed GE seed, but what's actually going on in the States at the moment is that same issue, and I think it's happening in the Midwest. It's been taken to the Supreme Court, is that a farmer has not wanting to actually pay additional money to get a second crop in of, I think he was actually growing corn or maize, he's actually gone and bought some GE stock feed and planted it and grown a second crop. So Monsanto are now taking him to court, saying that they've got license over that and he needed to pay them for it. And he's saying that, you know, he actually bought that stock feed crop and he shouldn't actually have to pay additional money from it just because he's actually procured a second crop from another source. But, I mean, GE you can't contain. They say that they're sterile, but you know, no science is 100% at the end of the day, and that's the same story that's actually being touted about this GM salmon that they're talking about releasing at the end of this year. And the FDA looks like they're going to rubber stamp that, and they're professing that that's sterile as well. But the reality of the matter is that, you know, maybe 1% of the GE salmon most probably isn't. So that has implications on anything else. And that's one of the biggest arguments against GE, is that it will contaminate, and it will contaminate every other possible food source that we have, whether it's organic or conventional, and then it takes away the consumer's right to choose and the farmer's right to choose as well what they're growing. So in your case, just, you know, your story just exemplifies that.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Sad and 1%
situation.
1% is way too high. I mean, geez, that's a gun waiting to go off, you know.
Yeah.
That's just...
Yeah, it is. It's a huge gun waiting to go off because, you know, these companies are actually holding the world population. You know, they're holding a gun to their head, basically. And we know that. We've actually seen that. And certainly the stories that we've actually heard suggest that that's exactly what's actually happening. But as soon as they get contamination, then and nothing else can exist, we've got no way of going back. That's the agricultural dead end, and that's why so many people oppose GE. Whether or not you believe in the science, is that it removes choice.
Wasn't it the green revolution in India that put so many farmers out of business and nearly caused the starvation pandemic?
The green revolution in what regard?
Well, these seeds that were water hogs, not GE, but they were hybrid, and the hybridization really was demanding of water, which isn't that they have in India, and was leading to a lot of crop failure in India and a lot of suicide, farmers committing suicide and starvation.
Yeah, India is just such a sad story, really, because the subsistence farmers over there are just being pushed every which way but loose by these big corporates and being dictated to. But, you know, some of the stories that are coming out from India now is that people are actually going back to organics because They've been left trying to farm in a dust bowl, and the only way to actually farm sustainable is to get their soil sorted, and the only way to do that is with organics. You know,
I heard that there was a massive push by Monsanto to get their Terminator seeds and chemical farming practices into India, and as a result, it toxified the soil, dried it out, and that was what was leading to farmer suicides. And I saw a documentary where a New Zealand organic maestro, as it were, would visit these villages in India and show them how to use what they had available, usually cow horns and cow manure and things like that to fertilize their crops. One particular thing that I found was particularly interesting is if you take a cow horn and it's hollow and you fill it full of cow manure and you bury it, it actually becomes a really potent fertilizer.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that's it. Organics is actually giving people, it's empowering people to produce, to be self-sustainable so that you don't have to rely upon, America to actually supply GE seed, basically. So, but the real tragedy in India is the amount of people that have actually killed themselves over this issue. You know, it really is life or death. So as we've seen with the Seralini study last year over these rats and, you know, whether or not you're actually eating GE, which has huge implications on your health and your lifespan, or whether or not you're growing it, certainly has huge implications on your lifespan as well, especially if you're a subsistence farmer. So, but it's a real tragedy. And, you know, these big agritech organisations just need to be brought to account for playing that game, because it really is a playing Russian roulette with people's lives.
Well, I think that they're really playing Russian roulette with the revolving door, you know, between these massive agribusiness and the administration.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, and the fact our scientific community is actually now being compromised by them as well is pretty sad. I was actually at a meeting this week with one of our supporters who's actually an ex-GE scientist who now is so dramatically opposed to it. But, of course, she's no longer working in the industry, and she's got some pretty, you know, interesting and sad stories to tell about the fact that, you know, people don't say anything because their jobs are at risk or their funding's at risk. And scientists shouldn't be put in that position. You know, we've always touted scientists as giving independent advice and doing independent research studies, but that's really not the case anymore.
Unless it's some scientist in his back shed or something like that, in which case he'll just get raided by the FDA or FCC or something.
Yeah, and someone will publicly take him out in the media that his research is totally unfounded, despite the fact that is, you know, nothing like some of the research that goes on with Monsanto and big agritechs when they're doing GE studies, but their studies are only conducted over 90 days. You know, the thing about Seralini is that study was actually conducted over the lifetime of the rat, and that's what actually is going to, you know, so it's tobacco science that they're employing, suggesting that they're actually doing studies that are over 90 days. It's not going to tell you anything over a 90-day period. So they're doing studies that actually support the GE argument, but they're certainly not scientific.
Yeah, the scientific industry of all kinds, I think, has just been corrupted, and I just there's two kinds of ways that you can corrupt science. As you mentioned before, you know, threats, you know, losing their money and what have you. And the other one is you threaten them with loss of credibility. And what's ironic in these times is that to tell the truth is something that will lose you your credibility in the scientific field. Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that bizarre? Yeah, really bizarre. But there are some people doing it at a great personal risk to themselves, because, you know, some people have that had resulting personal injury as a consequence of coming out and making a stand against big agritech and saying this is wrong and you shouldn't be feeding people this. And even the precursor to the FDA rubber stamping, GE, their scientists were actually saying the same 20 years prior. You know, we really need to do more intensive studies about GE and the effect on consumers. And, they were just totally disregarded and the FDA just stormed ahead with their plans to actually bring it through the food chain. And they've actually done that by, putting it into sugar beets and corn. And so all oils that are actually put in products have actually got GE. So, yeah.
Randleston, still there?
Can I mention one thing, plug one thing before I go?
Yeah.
I just wanted to plug the great Australian Bill Mollison. If anyone listening doesn't know who he is, go on YouTube Google it, Bill Mollison. He's pretty much the father of permaculture. And I have a personal story in regards to that, where I actually went out with my 7-year-old daughter when we were living in Pennsylvania, and we went out and picked knotweed. It's a cousin to buckwheat or rhubarb, and it tastes just like rhubarb. And we cut it at 12 to 18 inches in April or March when it first came up, end of March, and we put up about 20 quarts of something that's as good as rhubarb, not quite as tart, and mixed with strawberries, and made pies all summer. And there, if you want to figure out how to get out of this GMO rat race, where even Freshfield says they can't keep GMO out, well, if you cook it yourself, you know it's GE-free.
That's it. I mean, I think that's why we've actually seen, a 300-400% increase in the past 5 years. In gardens in New Zealand. And the biggest, ironically, has actually been in Christchurch. We've seen a huge resurgence in New Zealand with organic gardening and people in community gardens and school gardens. And, of course, that stood them in really good stead when they've actually had these earthquakes, and your food security is at risk. And that's definitely what we advocate in a big way, is take responsibility for yourself and grow your own, because then you know where it's coming from.
Yeah. I do think that in Christchurch, the whole liquefaction problem, basically, you're an idiot if you build a city on a swamp to start with.
Yeah.
Okay. So whatever you're growing probably can't be that good. And then on top of that, you've got earthquakes where all this mucky, salty, wet, sandy kind of crap kind of comes out and sort of envelops everything and sinks your house like it's a Tarzan movie or something like that.
Yeah.
You better have yourself some raised flower beds, methinks. And indeed, there's been the Ellerslie Flower Show. Interestingly enough, is relocated to, it looks like, the biggest flower show in New Zealand, right? And it's recently relocated down to Christchurch, and apparently they're going really well. Some dude won the competition because he had a whole bunch of transplanted plants or something like that in his big spectrographic kind of plant display McThingy. I don't know the whole identifier, but Christchurch, mate, seriously, I've been there several times. Some very hardy people down there.
Well, it's kind of, Christchurch is actually called our garden city, so it's really good to see that it's actually living up to its name. Good on Christchurch.
Yeah, better than Quicksand City.
Yeah.
Quicksand City slickers, Billy Crystal. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Debbie Swanwick is my guest. Wanting to take your calls, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And you're calling in from New Zealand, I think there's a 001 in front of that. Back in a minute.
Bonk. suckers.
Every fin in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my constant silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let Sunday Eve give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back.
Some people pay for thrills, but I get my...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment for this episode today. I was up at 4 o'clock this morning to go on the Jack Blood show, and he had technical difficulties, and it didn't happen. You know how frustrating it is to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to find out that it's for no reason? Oh, my gosh. That's nasty. My very special guest, who is not so, quite so nasty, is Debbie Swanwick.
Funny.
I hope you've enjoyed your little stint on the show here today. I mean, first it was going to be, we're going to have you on. We were first going to have you on for like one segment for like 17 minutes, and then I had a cancellation, and then we had you on for an hour, and then I had another cancellation, and here we are in the second hour at the very end.
Yeah. As you do. Yeah. No, it's been great. I mean, it's always good to be able to speak to people and share our story, share their story, really, is what it's all about, because all we're doing is advocating for consumers and what they're actually wanting with regards to their food, which, you know, they keep telling us the same thing. We don't want GE in our food. We don't want pesticides. We don't want additives. And the other issue is we want animals to be treated right. You know, we had a recent situation in New Zealand where 80% of New Zealanders are actually wanting battery cages banned. And what was really sad is that our government's actually chosen to introduce colony cages. So whereas in the past 3 or 4 chickens are actually living together, colony cages is where 60 chickens are going to be living in a 3-metre cage. So, you know, they haven't actually taken on board what consumers are actually wanting and how they want their food to be grown. So, and at the end of the day, that's not coming into effect until I think it's 2023 or something like that. Whereas with pork in this country, New Zealanders have said the same thing about sauerkrauts, and sauerkrauts in this country are going to be banned in 2015, so, which is fantastic. So for some reason, the government officials obviously prefer pork over chicken is all I can say.
See, I've wondered about this this battery farming and cage farming kind of thing, like how much food do they produce per area of land in order to and conversely, if you got rid of them, how exactly would you compensate for that shortfall in the food supply, or would there even really be one, because considering how much food wastage there is as it is?
Yeah, well, New Zealanders are big consumers, especially, you know, eggs is a major source of protein for us. So we consume 1 billion eggs a year. But this has always been our argument against factory farming is we believe in quality, not quantity. So, and, you know, you can actually say someone can actually be overweight, for example, but... be malnourished. So, and what we know to be true with organics and growing heritage seeds actually, is that it provides more nutritional value for people, and that's what we want to see, you know, healthy, safe food for people, not food that's actually grown with unfair practices or contaminated.
You know, the medical industry that makes a hell of a killing off of sick people probably wouldn't like that.
No. But, yeah, I mean, that's where the East have actually got one up on us, because their practices are a lot more preventative, whereas our medical practices are a lot more reactionary. But one of the things that we advocate for is, you know, clean up your diet and then you don't end up with all this sickness. So, and you know, research actually tells us that, but anecdotal evidence actually tells us that as well. You know, the 92-year-old our founding member that you were actually speaking of, Margaret Jones, she's just the living epitome of the benefits of organics, having a healthy lifestyle.
And I believe there's a video of Margaret Jones on my YouTube channel, folks, so if you want to... I think she had an interview with Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine, this magazine here, produced in New Zealand, and conversely, on the reverse, New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. And, it was quite interesting. And I don't know. I have a real fondness for my elders for some reason. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because they've seen more than me, and I'm a young whippersnapper who knows that he should just shut up and listen sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you search Margaret Jones on my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, you should be able to come up with that video there. You know, we've got about 5 minutes left in the broadcast, Debbie. I was wondering what actually motivated you to get into this, because I've talked to a number of activists over my time, and usually the reason why they do what they do is either they were really, really successful in the industry of some kind, and then they had a fall from grace, you know, like somebody really badly shafted them and they spent the rest of their life trying to get back at them, or they just kind of grow up in a family where it becomes inevitable that they'd be an advocate for other people's health and welfare and what have you. I was wondering what your story was.
Yeah, well, I can't say it was either, actually. You know, I grew up in suburbia, I've just always, I suppose the deciding factor for me in my career would be, I actually started my career working in marketing for a big pharmaceutical company. Well, the pharmacy industry anyways, which advocated for pharmaceuticals. And so I think I'd actually been working there for a year, and I decided that, you know, it was just shallow. There was just nothing behind it. So, and I went back and did my degree, and when I finished it, ironically, I went to the States. So I decided to actually do a big OE around the States, and I lived in Boston for a period of time and saw the homelessness issue that was going on in Boston, then went and lived in Ireland for a period of time, saw the drugs issue that was going on there, and I thought, you know, I've always been about making a difference, and I thought, here's how I can actually, you know, use what I know and what I've been trained in and actually make a difference, and I've always done something about the environment, because I just think, you know, the environment is literally what feeds us, and it's always been a key factor in my life. So, you know, this was just an obvious move for me where I can take my skill set and change the world. So
nothing like a bit of disillusionment with the way things are going and a bit of life experience to activate you, eh?
Yeah, that's right, you know. And that's what it's about, you know. It makes a difference to people, and it makes a difference to you too, you know. They say that working in a not-for-profit or for a good cause adds X amount of years to your life. So I strongly advocate for that.
Yeah. Now, there was notes that I was putting on here. Oh, yeah, tax lobbying and volunteering. You know what's interesting in a society where everybody's taxed almost 50 to 60% of their income if you add it all up?
Yeah.
They don't really have a hell of a lot of time left for volunteering.
No, they don't. They don't. Yeah, so, you know, but it definitely, especially with, I was reading some research quite recently about teenage kids, you know, and how to make them feel better about themselves, get them doing some volunteering. But at the very least, if you can't get them doing some volunteering, get them working in your own garden, you know, so that they've got a sense of pride in what they're doing. And this is, I think, what's actually happening with community gardens. People are actually reconnecting with their neighbours, because that's a lost art. People are just too busy, you know. But they're reconnecting with their neighbours over a cause, which is, you know, we want safe, fresh, healthy food, and instilling some pride in not only themselves, but giving them some skills and instilling some pride in their communities. And I think that's the way of the future, you know, that we just need to get back to our communities and stop this corporate takeover that's, you know, just breaking people off from who they intuitively know they are, you know.
Yeah. That reminds me of I took a trip down to the Temple of the Four Winds. This is some kind of sacred place among the Māori. I'm the first journalist to ever be invited down there in history, so I was pretty honoured. And I'm not a journalist. I'm not even trained, but I still do it better than most of the trained ones.
Yeah, you do.
And what was it? We were stopped in Tikawiri to just get some cash out of the cash machine, right?
Yeah.
And me with these three Māori kaumātua, these elders, looking around and just like so many young kids in the street, nothing to do, nobody managing them, no projects, no hope, no prospects. Yeah. And, and deeply saddened them to see. And, you know, I've felt really gutted about it as well. And, you know, kids are pretty freaking industrious so long as they're actually having fun while doing something and have got something to show for it. You know, you produce really healthy individuals. But unfortunately, society it just sort of allows them to fall by the wayside, and they don't have to. And you don't have to wait for a government to come in and tell you to do this or whatever. Just be an individual. Make it happen. What are you waiting for?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Well, I think schools are actually now picking up the charge, especially around gardening and teaching kids how to do it. And, yeah, it's good stuff. That's really good to see happening.
Well, let us see more of it, I hope. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to myself and Debbie Swanwick from organicnz.org.nz. .org.nz, of course. And, well, I guess what we're really listen to here is, ladies and gentlemen, don't swallow everything you get fed by the mainstream media. We'll see you again sometime, folks.